the Voice America Business Channel. Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Hey, good morning, Rick.
Good morning, good morning.
You know, it's October 16th. It's a very happy day for me.
The day after the tax day.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people don't realize it because April 15th is such a famous day. But for those of us that actually do tax returns, and especially a lot of business returns or returns for people that invest in a lot of businesses, today is yesterday was the day. So.
Big day.
Because it's as long as you can stretch it out.
Right, the final day you can extend to when it all has to be done.
Right, so that's always a good thing to have behind us. And so today we wanted to, we're going to be doing an interesting show. You want to tell us about what we're going to do?
Yes. Most of us, in fact, I dare any of our listeners to call in and say this has never happened to them. Most of us have done something we regret doing with our money. And we're going to call today's show Stupid Wealth Tricks. And the real trick is to figure out what we're going to regret before we do it rather than after we do it. And we have a lot of examples of really dumb things that people have done with their money. And regrettably, some of these are autobiographical, but a lot of them also come from our clients. So today we're going to talk about really stupid things to not do with your money. And we hope that for our listeners, that will help them be smarter than all the people who didn't listen to our show, because they'll know some of the dumb things to not do. And, you know, the news we have today is kind of interesting because it might be almost a stupid thing to do with money. And why don't you tell us about our news interlude, and then we'll dive into this stupid money tricks.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm becoming, I was telling Rick earlier, I'm becoming sort of a political junkie during this this election cycle, and mainly because I think it's the incredibly important time for America and for making choices about which way we're going to go with the way this country is governed. But anyway, you hear a lot about the candidates, and of course, on the tax side, there's all this flap over that Romney's tax rates. And of course, I guess the latest news is that his tax rate that he pays, and this is if you calculate it by, you know, tax that he paid over adjusted gross income, his is the lowest since Richard Nixon. Anyway, his comes in at about 14.1%. So, you know, and what I think, and I do taxes all the time, what I'm thinking is, do you want a president that's smart enough to structure his affairs so he pays as little as possible? I mean, if you want to blame somebody about the rate, blame Congress. No one has ever said that Romney's doing anything wrong. They're just unhappy that they're paying more than he is. And the other interesting thing along that line, so that people don't feel like he's just taking all that money and having a great time, is that over a 20-year period, they gave to charity an average of about 14% of their adjusted gross income. And so if you do all the math on all of this, the interesting thing is that between taxes and charity, the Romneys have paid 40% on average of their adjusted gross income. So by anybody's measure, that's a pretty big number. You'd have to search pretty far and wide, even among all the presidents we've ever had, to have actually given more than that to taxes and charity. So, anyway, it's interesting to dig into the numbers, Rick, and really understand what's going on with people. And so here's a guy that, by the Democrats' assessment, doesn't care about people, and but certainly appears to give an awful lot to charity. So
wait, the stupider we are with our own tax planning, the more we care about people. Is that the measure of the criteria we're going to use? I was really dumb and paid more in taxes than I needed to, just because I want to be generous to the government. I don't know. That's kind of a weird way to look at life. You know, I'm thinking here that if you tax it, people will avoid it, whatever it is. And if you don't tax it, they'll do it. So if there are, there are certain investments, municipal bonds being an example, that are tax-free. So people will invest in those kind of bonds, even though they have a lower return than maybe some other kinds of investments, because of the tax attributes. And there's all kinds of tax credits and tax deductions and tax exemptions, and a person would be a fool not to take advantage of those. Maybe that can be our first example, not structuring our personal affairs in such a manner as to minimize our taxes. That can be stupid trick number one. I want to kind of come back into our topic and introduce this thing. We have actually so many examples, we may not get through all of them in our program today, but some years ago, I have a big four-wheel drive truck, and I was with a bunch of Boy Scouts in a very remote wilderness location.
Wait, you were with Boy Scouts?
Yeah, Boy Scouts.
That's so shocking.
Yeah, imagine, this is how I spend my weekends.
Rick is a big Boy Scouter, for those of our listeners who haven't figured that out.
Yeah, and there was this river, and it was a little river, and I had been driving my truck through this river, and it was really fun, and we were taking turns to load boys into the cab. We wouldn't let them sit in the back, so they're in the cab in seat belts, and we'd go through the river and come out and have lots of fun. Well, one of the times going through this river, I apparently hit a submerged rock and broke an axle on my truck, and suddenly it wouldn't move. And in the particular location where this happened, the water that was flowing came up about halfway up the door on the side of my cab. Now, if you go through the water pretty quick, having water come up halfway on the side of your door of your truck is not that big of a deal. But if suddenly you stop, it's a big deal. So I ended up with water flowing through the cab of my truck, and it ruined all kinds of stuff. It took me 2 days to get the truck out of the river and back home. And it was a very, very expensive little adventure. And when a friend heard of my adventure, this is what he said to me. He said, if you're going to be stupid, you've got to be tough. And if you're going to be that stupid, just break out your wallet. So that's kind of the theme, I guess, we're going to go with, quoting my friend. And he was a friend. He's a very good friend. And he was right. If you're going to be stupid, you got to be tough. And if you're going to be that stupid, just break out your wallet. So we're going to look at some things people do with money, stupid money tricks. And we'll give that. The bonus one was that first one, not structuring your affairs in such a manner that it minimizes your tax liability. And by the way, our teaser for today is stay tuned. Before coming up before the end of the show, we're going to talk about the big number one stupidest all-time thing people can do with money. And it's so big and so stupid, it transcends all tax laws. It transcends all economies. It transcends all business issues or tax issues. It's just one that's really stupid, the stupidest of all, and it would apply in all times, in all cultures, in all money systems, and that's the last one we're going to hit. So today, we're going to start with trying to make the pie bigger through litigation. as a lawyer, and I will acknowledge I'm not a litigator, and that is by choice. I think litigation ranks right up there with nuclear holocaust and suicide as catastrophically stupid things that people can do. And sometimes I've heard people actually say, if I'm going to file this lawsuit because it will result in there being more money. It just doesn't work. The math doesn't work. What happens is the pie gets smaller, or your piece of the pie will get smaller, because if nothing else, you're going to be sharing a big chunk of it with lawyers. I'm in a situation right now, observing a situation. I'm not counsel of record, but a lawsuit involving among family members, parents and children, children suing a parent, and with the idea that if I sue my parent, I will get a bigger inheritance, which just that's a bizarre way to think. But the inheritance is going to be smaller. The family's spending money on legal fees like crazy. And even if there is some kind of a recovery for these family members, it's going to be less than they would have had otherwise. And it's going to be further reduced by the piece that they give to the lawyers. So you can't make the pie bigger by suing other people.
Unless you're an attorney.
Yeah, unless you're a lawyer, unless it's your business. If you're in the business of getting paid to litigate, and so you got to look at that litigation. Who gets paid to litigate? And it's not the litigants, it's the lawyers. There's an old picture of lawyers will hang this on their wall of two lawyers, two clients, one pulling on the horns of a cow and the other one pulling on the tail of a cow. And the two clients are both skinny and you know, emaciated, about to die from want of food, and then a big fat lawyer milking the cow. Saying, come on, guys, keep pulling. You can win if you just keep pulling. And the lawyer keeps milking the cow, and that's what litigation is like. The lawyer right. milks it, and the clients suffer.
So I know we've both seen that in many, many businesses and family groups, and the result is always the same. So the next one, those of you that listen to the news, you probably heard recently about this guy in Nevada that they found. He'd been dead in his house for a month or so, and they went in to clean up and take care of things, and they found $7.5 million worth of gold in the closet. And apparently this was a guy that that hated the government and hated paying taxes. And so he was attempting to cheat death by just not doing any planning. He's just putting all of his wealth in the closet and gold. But I guess the ironic thing here is that he apparently has no heirs. And so who's going to end up with the gold after all? It's the government. So... So planning is probably a really, really good thing to do because if you really don't like paying taxes, or you know whatever it is you don't like, there are legitimate ways to reduce the tax burden and end up with whatever you have left going to something that you care about or that you believe in, not the thing that you're trying to avoid. So. That's what we do, spend a lot of our life doing, Rick, is helping people in that process.
You know, I've heard people say, well, I don't want to do my estate plan. I don't want to prepare a will, because there's this notion that that's something you do just before you die. And if I prepare a will or a trust, then I'm going to die. And frankly, the opposite is the case. When people are proactive, when they take responsibility for the stuff they have, when they're good stewards with it and are thinking through, well, what's going to happen with all this stuff when I'm done, and they make a plan for it, they actually live longer. They're healthier, they have less stress, and they don't have the anxiety of wondering what's going to happen. And
as you and I know, if you don't plan, if you wait that long to plan, your options are pretty limited. And, you know, as we know with this $5 million gift exclusion that's expiring here in a few weeks, that's something you could take advantage of, even at a young age, and it would be a huge benefit. But trying to do that, you know, just before you die, that's not going to help much.
The deathbed check, you know, I'm going to sign the check as my, what were his final words? He scribbled his signature on a check, giving his money away. It doesn't work. And, you know, the principle, if you do not have a plan for what's going to happen with your wealth when you pass away, don't worry. The government has a plan for you. And, you know, it's a minor thing. Maybe you're concerned about this. Maybe you're not. But the government's plan is designed to optimize government revenue, which may not be consistent with what you want to have happen with your money.
Probably not. So tell us about people that try to solve money problems in a marriage by getting divorced.
You know, again, I'm not a divorce lawyer, although I have in my law career, I took a survey early on and tried one of everything. I tried doing a divorce and found that I just did not like the idea of my client was crying in my office because her marriage was ending and then she was blaming me for it. I find it ironic that people will say, we don't have enough money and we're constantly struggling over money. And so we're going to solve that problem by getting divorced. That never makes the money problem go away. That's a problem they're going to take with them. In fact, you're going to make it worse because now instead of one household, there's going to be two households. Instead of jointly making decisions, they're going to be on their own. And now often there are issues with one spouse or another being irresponsible with money, although that's actually pretty rare. Typically, it's just that the real problem in the marriage is a communication problem or a kindness problem or a showing respect problem, and it just happens to be that money is the point where that problem manifests itself. So you're not going to have more money after a divorce than while you're married. You're not suddenly going to be able to afford things you couldn't afford before. Now that you're divorced, money problems are going to follow you. So there may be reasons to get divorced, but there may be reasons to address your money problems, but the divorce is not going to make you have more money.
Right. We've got a couple of minutes till break here, and so let's see how many more of these we can get through here. We've got a long list. But one thing that you and I have seen over the years so many times is people that come in and they do planning and they pay for a trust and maybe a couple of trusts and, you know, a structure that really does a lot of really cool things. And then they get excited, but then they don't do anything about it. They don't fund it. In other words, they don't move the assets into the entities that we set up. So everything that they did is for naught. So they pay us to do this, and then with their little piece that they're supposed to do of, you know, setting up some bank accounts and moving some deeds and that kind of thing, it just doesn't happen. And so that's a really, really dumb thing that people do with money. And of course, you and I, which I explain to people all the time, is when they hire us, that typically won't happen because they have you to do the documents and get everything set up and me to make sure it's all planned and it gets all done on the back end. So
that is an area where you and I work together really, really well as a team because we each can do different things for the clients. And at the end of the day, the clients are better served because we've created the entity, we got the entity funded, and we're properly using it. You know, as you were talking, I was reminded of a situation some years ago. I had a referral source. He was an insurance guy. Brought me a significant number of clients, and we did substantial planning. And one of the things we do with planning, especially with life insurance, is we cause it to be owned by a trust for a variety of reasons. And this guy died suddenly and unexpectedly and had a very large life insurance policy. And the beneficiary of this policy was his estate, Literally, he put on the policy application, the beneficiary, my estate. And the effect of that was several things. We had to probate it. We had to open up a probate for the life insurance, which was totally silly, number one. And number two, it was included in his taxable estate, and the IRS took about half the money. Ooh. And this was a guy who knew better, who was in the industry, who just should have not done that at all. And he'd paid for an estate plan, had a very nice state-of-the-art plan, but completely frustrated it because he didn't properly fund it.
Well, we've got a whole long list here, Rick, but we need to take a break, and we'll come back and talk about some more of these right after this break.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace speak at a glance without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. Leadership is a vital skill set in today's competitive global economy. Being a leader is not enough. To succeed, you must optimize your performance and know how to imbue others in your organization with leadership skills. Practical, actionable leadership insights are the focus of Leadership Development News, hosted each Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, by Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler on the Voice America Business Channel. Doctors Greenberg and Nadler, who coach global leaders on how to be most effective, will share their insights and contacts. The path to leadership excellence begins here.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everybody. Just before break, we were talking a little bit about having a trust or planning entities and structures and not funding them and properly using them. One of the places where we see this in the example we used was with owning life insurance. Life insurance, if not properly owned, can actually result in higher taxes and increased expenses and liabilities. So not having proper structures to put the life insurance in is one side of the issue. But then the other side is not buying life insurance. And I got to tell you, not long ago at church, I heard a life insurance guy say to somebody that was sitting next to him, he says, yeah, I'm at the funeral. I'm the only guy that shows up with a check in my pocket for the widow. And on the one hand, I had an emotional reaction. I thought that is really irritating that this guy's talking in church to his neighbor about selling him life insurance. I thought, can he do that some other time except during church? But on the other hand, you know, he's got a point. As the lawyer, I have seen so many situations where the life insurance, when someone passes away, is a huge blessing, a tremendous blessing, because the widow is able to stay in her house and raise her children, or the business is able to continue going and and provide revenue for family members, or the tax liability is able to get paid without selling the farm or other assets at fire sale prices, or where we're just able to transition assets in a smooth way without having to sell stuff to divide up the pie. So not buying life insurance is just a catastrophically bad idea. I think part of being grown up and responsible is buying life insurance. And I'm going to tell you also, from the lawyer's perspective, I don't sell this stuff. You can't buy it from me. But I hear people say, well, life insurance is a terrible investment. And then they'll tell you all the things they can invest in that give a better rate of return. Well, we don't buy it as an investment. We buy it as a hedge against an untimely death. And there's different kinds and types of life insurance that we could talk about. That's another program. But in my experience as a lawyer, looking at what people do, the responsible and prudent thing for any head of a household to do, man or woman, is to buy life insurance, and not buying it is just a big mistake.
Right, and it's one of those things, for all those who are looking for a tax break out there, it's one of those things on the income tax side, at least, that is not taxed. You don't have to pay tax on life insurance proceeds. So you always know that if you die, the heirs, your wife, whoever, are going to end up with whatever the face value of that policy is, and it's not going to get, half of it's not going to get taxed away. And if you talk to us and get it structured right, it also won't get taxed away in your estate, because it is estate taxable. So next thing that we know from sad experience is that a really dumb thing to do is where you have a good advisory team on board, you have a good attorney, a CPA, and rather than involving them when you're doing a major purchase like a business or an investment or insurance, you just kind of do an end run around them, and then just kind of hope for the best, because maybe you don't want to pay the few bucks, relatively speaking, to involve them in the planning. So that's a really dumb thing to do. We could have a whole program on things that have happened in that arena. So let's just say, in general, if you're considering a major purchase, if you're considering buying a business, selling a business, you're going to buy a major investment, maybe you're going to invest in something, or buy insurance, those are all things that you ought to get the advisory team involved in, because at the end of the day, you will spend a lot less and you'll be much, much happier with the investment, because you've got people that have seen all these dumb things that other people have done and can advise you on those.
You know, there's an old metaphor. It's throwing the fat on the fire. If you haven't cooked on a campfire, you don't know what that means. But if you're cooking something in a pan and there's oil, and you just tip that little pan and pour that oil on the fire, what it does is it catches on fire. And so the oil burns and everything in your pan burns. And if you've ever seen a Boy Scout saying, hey, I poured my fat on the fire, and now my dinner's on fire, is it help? Sometimes people do things like that, metaphorically speaking, with purchasing a business or an investment, and they come to the advisors after the fact when they've already poured the fat out and the fire's burning now. And so that's kind of the next advisory issue, is misusing or not using the advisory team. And two specific things: either not relying on them enough by ignoring their advice, and we see that a lot, or relying on them too much and not taking personal responsibility. And I've had both happen, and it's kind of spooky. And sometimes the same person will do both things. They'll, on the one hand, I'll say, okay, you should have this trust and we should fund it, and they will say, well, I'll pay you for the trust, but I will not let you fund it. Okay, they won't take my advice. And then I say, well, let's review this trust and make sure that the trustees are who you want and the beneficiary things are who you want. They go, oh, no. I have confidence in you. You're my lawyer. You prepared that. I'm sure it's right. And they just move on. So in the very same breath, they'll both ignore my advice and not take it seriously and then not take responsibility for their own planning.
Okay. Here's a good one, and especially given this, these last few years, we've seen this over and over again, where people misinterpret buy and hold to mean buy and ignore. And to put some perspective on that, if you look at the numbers, and I won't get these exactly right, but the concept is right. If you look at the last 10 years in the stock market, how much has it returned? The latest numbers I saw was about a negative 5%. So if you bought the market and held it over 10 years, you ended up with 5% less. The buy and hold strategy, first of all, we had a show last week where we talked about the market being suspect at all. Because it's obviously controlled by people that are smarter than individual investors and have more power to move the market, et cetera. And that we don't know anything about the companies that we're investing in, really. And that's another really dumb thing we can talk about at the same time, and that is investing in things that you don't understand. So today, the strategy of buying and holding, and certainly of buying and ignoring, are just, not going to get you anywhere. And this is not the go-go days of the 1990s where everything was going up and where, the dot-com bubble was going. Obviously, there are times like that, but we all have to plan our life on a longer scale than a few years. And so looking at your investment strategy and finding one that that works maybe a little bit better, and we've talked about some of those on this show, but buying and ignoring is just a really bad idea. And as we have mentioned several times, don't ever invest in something that you don't understand. And frankly, very few of you out there understand. Even if it's Apple, you don't understand their business. You don't know what's going on inside that company, and you have no idea when the next shoe will drop. It's just very difficult for anyone to have that kind of understanding. So maybe thinking about some alternative investments, or certainly augmenting with those, would be a smarter thing to do, because throwing it in the market, that's a really dumb thing to do if you're just going to throw it in and leave it.
You know, we addressed this issue somewhat with our guest last week, that there's this idea, and it's actually a solid idea for the type of investments that are out there, that risk goes up with the rate of return. The more return we get in an investment, the greater the risk. And that is true with certain types of investments, particularly securities, which are the last to get paid when trouble happens. And it doesn't have to be that way. This comes back to this investing in things you don't understand. There are types of investments that can be made where, instead of being the last to get paid, you're the first to get paid, and where your return can be very, very good. And that's something that requires more hands-on. It's a passive thing that you can turn over to a blind institution and say, okay, just do something magical with my money and make it grow. It requires far more active personal involvement, far more education and awareness, but it performs a lot better. And this kind of relates to another financial issue. All these kind of connect and tie together, but it's, the classic adage is, well, if you want to make money, buy low and sell high. And what we see so many people doing in a volatile market like this is exactly the opposite: selling low and buying high. They're they're behind the investment curve. They see the market coming down, 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 and they go, oh, no, oh, no, it's going down. I'm going to lose money. And so it finally gets down low enough that they sell in a panic. And then they watch the market turn around, and it starts to do better and better and better. And then they say, oh, the market's going up. The market's going up. I better get in and invest in something. And so they'll look around. Well, this investment has gone way, way up. And so that must be a good one. It's going to keep going way, way up. So they'll buy it after it's gone up. And this cycle of buying after it's gone down and buying or selling after it's gone down and buying after it's gone up is on the wrong side of the cycle. That's a way to successfully churn your own portfolio into less and less until you have little or nothing to show for it. So,
and there's a lot of investment advisors out there that will do that for you.
Yeah,
you can pay them.
They will let you pay them to do that on your behalf. Yes, sadly, that is true. You know, kind of another thing, and this is, we hear all the time, you know, it's that Greek dictum, buyer beware. Sometimes people will believe the too good to be true deal. They'll think, oh, this is the exception. And whether it's the foreign currency that because of some quirk in the exchange laws, I'm going to put pennies in this investment and get back millions, or it's the Nigerian politician that has fled the country with millions of dollars, and if you'll just send him a check for $10,000, he'll let you have a share of the money, or the whatever. Sometimes it's more homegrown. The deal you found on Craigslist or on eBay, that the used car that's way below market, and if you'll just FedEx them a check, they'll let you take delivery of this good car. There are scams by the dozen out there, and if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And that's another thing where an appropriate use of your advisory team when you get those too good to be true deals is to say, let me check with my lawyer, let me check with my CPA, get some advice from somebody who's seen enough of these deals to give you the heads up, hey, that one might not be such a good idea. Kind of another thing, another stupid money trick. Right now, lending rates on borrowed funds are at an all-time low. And we can talk about all the politics and the federal policies and the banking regulations that are causing this to be as it is. But in the lifetime of most people now living, even the really old people, we have never seen interest rates this low. And so this is a time to refinance. If you have debt out there, particularly long-term debt on real estate, on your primary residence, if you're paying, I've strangely enough encountered people still paying 9 or 10% on their mortgage that they've had for 15 years. And they come with me wide-eyed and say, gee, should I refinance? And this is one of those duh questions. This is the time to refinance if you still have an interest rate that's higher than the market. And I think the spread, where it's worth it, is about 2% is what I've been told, kind of rule of thumb. If you can reduce your rate by 2% or more, refinance.
I think that's just a rule of thumb, Rick, because with the rates and interestingly, banks are, depending on where they are in the cycle of getting rid of their bad assets, et cetera, if they've successfully accomplished that, they now have a lot of money to lend. And I'm finding that there are institutions out there where I'm finding with clients that I've been working with that in a month or two, they've covered all the refinance costs on the savings. And that's only coming down, you know, a point. Or, I mean, you can see that if you can pay it back that quickly, that
doesn't take a lot.
Yeah,
and you can leverage the benefit if you will go ahead and use your savings to pay the closing costs and go ahead and pay some of those expenses up front. Another little trick, by the way, when people refinance, they usually get this one free month. If they will pay, make that payment and apply that payment to principal, it reduces the life of the mortgage by, again, this is not exact, but 20 some odd percent of the life of the mortgage. So if it's a 30-year mortgage, it'll reduce it to a 22 or 23-year mortgage just by making that one extra principal payment up front.
Yeah, it's amazing. However, a long period where you're paying interest, that can make a huge difference. So
I think we've got to go to break, and then we've got, we're still not even halfway through our list of really dumb things to do with money. We're going to have to talk fast on some of these others to get to them. Let's take a break. We'll come back after break and hit the next really stupid trick you can do with your money.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup, or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Okay, everyone, we're back. We're going to have to power through our list here so that we can get to the really, really, really dumb one that we're going to talk about at the end. But first of all, and we've all heard this, but just quickly, probably a good idea not to always buy new cars. We all kind of know you drive it off the lot and it goes down in value 20% or whatever that is these days. But buying a slightly used car probably makes a huge difference over a lifetime. You consider the number of cars that you have to buy. So that's an important one.
I agree with that one. It kind of relates to the next one, because most people, when they buy cars, borrow money to do so. And that is the silliness of credit card debts. Right now, credit cards, of all the interest you can pay, credit card debt has the highest. And especially in a low interest market, why are we paying the highest rates? So cut up the credit cards, stop using them. Borrowing is not healthy, especially for consumer items. It's interesting when people put groceries on their credit card, stuff you're going to eat and then you're going to pay for it over a long period of time. Just doesn't make sense. So avoid the credit cards.
Okay. I have to chime in there that a lot of us that have to travel for business, et cetera, we put all kinds of things on credit cards because then we get flight points, but we're not paying interest on those. We're paying them off every month.
Yeah, so pay them off every month.
I think that's probably a smart thing right there. But
I would agree with that.
Now, The next one is, this is another one that I've seen, is that we have clients out there who they refuse to sell for a profit because they're going to have to pay capital gains tax. And I can tell you that there are a lot of bank shareholders out there, like that own B of A or some of these banks that were $54 a share a couple of years back, and now they're selling at $18. I think they would have been real happy to pay 15% capital gains tax and gotten $54 a share instead of being down to $18 now. So don't let the tax tail wag the dog. You gotta think about this, and if it's the right time to sell, then that's going to make that's the important decision. And obviously, the more we can structure for tax benefit, the better. But don't let that get in the way of selling when the appropriate time to sell is.
Right. I don't want to pay the tax, so I'm going to hold on to this investment as it crashes and burns.
Right. That goes back to our buy and hold discussion earlier.
The other thing is, I have to say, capital gain tax on the sale of an appreciated asset is an optional tax. That's one that we can plan around and avoid. It's not that big of a deal. It's not that hard. There are some fun and entertaining options that actually make the world a better place. Next one is confusing assets with liabilities. This is the classic. You can see the pimply 16-year-old boy telling his father, "I'm going to invest in a car." A car is not an investment. A car consumes cash. It does not produce cash. And in my lawyerly, simplistic way of looking at life, this is how I personally mentally distinguish between assets and liabilities. Assets produce cash, liabilities consume cash. So I want to know, what effect is this purchase going to have on my cash flow? If it makes my cash flow goes down, it's not an asset, it's a liability. So the boat, the car, the toys, especially the big doodads, fall into this category. But even sometimes things, the house that's more than I need, that may be pretty and fancy and makes us feel happy to have all these nice things around us. But if it's more than I need, it's consuming my cash. It's not an investment. It's a liability.
This next one may not be so obvious, but it really is something that we see people do that is pretty dumb. Using your retirement savings to pay off a credit card or any other debt for that matter. And the reason that is so dumb, and you know, the credit card is a good example because, as you mentioned, it's the highest interest rate out there. And so if it's dumb to pay off a credit card with retirement savings, it's really pretty dumb to pay off anything. And here's why, is because if you look at the math of all this, if you've got money in an IRA or some other retirement vehicle where you're going to have to pay a penalty and you're going to have to pay the tax when you take it out, it takes a long time to make up for that, unless that debt is going to be there for a long, long time. You need to look at the math and just chip away and pay the credit card off or whatever debt you have, typically wiser than taking money out of retirement, paying the penalty, paying the tax. And so be on guard for that, because sometimes we get so focused on paying off debt that we do even dumber things.
You know, that the principle at play here is understanding long-term versus short-term. You don't incur long-term debt to receive a short-term benefit. You don't get rid of a long-term benefit to relieve yourself of a short-term liability. That play between long-term and short-term is pretty critical there. Another dumb thing people do with money is trusting banks either too little or too much. Banks are useful. They're good. We like banks. But we see people keeping their money in the mattress. They won't put it in the bank at all. And if it's in the mattress, it's not protected. It's not helping anybody. And then we see people putting money in the bank, but they put it all in their checkbook, which banks love that, demand deposit accounts, because the cost of the funds for the bank is virtually zero. They get to use that money make money on it while you don't get money on it. So use your bank appropriately. Trust them the right amount, not too much and not too little. Employ them to do what they do well, but don't let them take advantage of you, and don't keep your money in a mattress. Another one, a big, huge one that I have very strong feelings about is borrowing money for college and then dropping out. And this is legendary. And so many young people are in this situation where they borrow money, they start the semester, and sometimes, in fairness, there's a medical crisis or some other situation that intervenes in their ability to finish the semester. But they drop out, and then they don't have the college credits, but they still have the debt. And I'm just going to say that I frankly think that borrowing money to go to college in any event at any level is probably not wise financially. I've seen so many people borrow huge amounts of money to get a professional degree, and then they're burdened with this big, huge debt. I've even seen industries like, and I'll just say this, dentistry is an industry where it used to be that a dentist coming out of school could open up a shop and maybe borrow money to buy the equipment and have their own privately owned practice. Now can't do that because they have too much debt. And so we're seeing the entrepreneurial dentist give way to the employee dentist, where now they work for a big corporation instead of working for themselves.
Or another dentist who's figured it out.
Yeah, who's figured it out. So if you can go to college and not borrow the money, you're going to be way ahead of the guys that borrow money to get through college.
I was reading yesterday, I think, an article, Rick, and I think it's fully 30% of the debt, student loan debt out there is held by folks who borrowed and then dropped out.
Wow.
So that's a huge number. And by the way, student loan debt in this country is as out of control as Obama's spending in general. So it's just a disaster waiting to happen. Next one is putting money in an IRA without understanding the consequences of it. You know, people say, well, you know, it's a thing to do. People, advisors say, yeah, just put your money in, and then they earn a fee on getting you into mutual funds, et cetera. You know, you need to understand that there might be better ways to save for retirement other than what the government plan is for you. And because when you come out of an IRA, everything is ordinary gain. There's no capital gain, so you get to pay the full bore tax on it. You have restrictions on the withdrawal. You can't get to it if you need it in the meantime. Some people say that's good, but I have to think, you know, if you're saving for your own retirement, you got to be disciplined. So not understanding the consequences of what you're doing when you put it in an IRA, that's a big problem. Another one is, and we see this a lot, Rick, where we have people that come in, they have these big IRAs that they somehow acquired over time, and they're just hoping that it will get to the children. They don't really know the consequences of what happens when you die and you have this big IRA, and maybe they haven't planned for it at all, and typically they haven't. But there's a lot of cool things you can do with big IRAs that a lot of people just don't know. For example, if you make arrangements, all of it can pass at death to a charity completely tax-free. And if you have a charity that you want to take care of, that's the asset to do it with. And people don't know that try to do it with another asset, and they end up paying a big tax bill. Or you can take, you know, when you have distributions coming out of an IRA, you could take that money. This is especially true of a lot of clients that don't really need the money. And you can buy a life insurance policy, and those required minimum distributions can pay for that over time. And then at the end, the charity or your heirs or whoever you want end up with exactly the amount of money that you plan for them to have, whether that's $2, $3, $4, or $5 million. You buy the policy, and that's what gets to them because it's not going to get taxed at death. So there's a lot of good things to do, but a lot of people do really dumb things with their IRA money, and maybe one of them is setting it up at all.
Yeah, an IRA is one of those we mentioned earlier. Don't invest in something you don't understand. An IRA is one of the biggest, hugest areas where that happens. People get into them and don't know what the rules are. They don't know who can change the rules, and then they think one thing is going to happen, and they're getting another. And you got to know what the end game is before you get into it.
Right, Rick. We're about out of time here, so we need to get to.
So we're going to hit the last two. Yeah, these important ones. The last one we're going to mention, last two actually. Number one is trying to increase your happiness by getting more money at the expense of time and happiness with your family. What your children really want is not for you to spend another night at the office. What your children really want is for you to come home and be with them. So do not mistake money for what matters most. It does not matter most. It matters least of all. Go take care of your family. And the last one, the biggest, hugest, really stupid thing people do with their money is using money to bail children out of their life challenges. A parental impulse when we see our children suffer is to think, oh, I have money. I can fix that problem for them. And we run into the rescue. Let me pay that medical bill. Let me pay that credit card. Let me help you with that tuition. Let me help you with that car. Let me help you with that house. And when we do that, it creates dependencies, and there are huge consequences beyond the money that have psychological and spiritual damage to those children. So I'm just going to say straight up, do not use your money to bail your children out of their life challenges. Let them struggle. Let them have the joy of their own victory. Let them have their own discovery experience of learning when they've done something dumb that it has unpleasant consequences. Let children live their lives, and don't try and take that away from them. So here, as we're wrapping up, we want to have some calls to action. One is, of course, don't be stupid with your money. Hopefully listening to our show can help you with that. Think before you act, and act before it's too late. And then we want to invite you to call us, email us, come to our website, let us know examples of stupid money tricks you've seen that we didn't talk about, and we can include them on a future show. One of the things that you can do to not be stupid is to get smart, study and listen. And if you're listening to this show, you're in the group of people that are among the smart ones, we like to think. We flatter ourselves to think that our listeners are among the smartest people in the world. So we're glad you're here. It's a pleasure to visit with you. One of the best things that we get to do is talk to our listeners as they contact us as a result of our show. So give us a call, 480-324-8000. Email us at info@whataboutwealth.com. And we'll be back next week with another great show.
Thank you for listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.